Hello, this is Mary Moylan reading the News Gazette Part 2 for Thursday, April 9th, 2026. We'll begin with some obituaries. Rolene Broomfield, 89 of Urbana, died Friday, April 3rd at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Williams Memorial Services, 1203 North Market Street, Champaign. Leif L. Christensen, 48 of Champaign, died Wednesday, February 4th, 2026 at home. Services will be at 1:30 p.m. Saturday at Unitarian Universalist Church, Urbana. Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory, 1900 South Philo Road, Urbana, is handling arrangements. Lillian Maxine Kriblas, 99 of Potomac, died Thursday, April 2nd, 2026 at Hawthorne Inn, Danville. Visitation is scheduled for Thursday, April 9th from 9:30 to 11 a.m. at No. 10 Church of Christ, followed immediately by funeral services at 11 a.m. led by Pastor Gary Davis. Burial will be in Embury Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to No. 10 Church of Christ in Lillian's memory. Louis Alex Abril Garcia, 14 of Urbana, died Wednesday, April 1st, 2026, at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Williams Memorial Service, 1203 North Market Street, Champaign. Gerald D. Roberts, 93 of Penfield, passed away peacefully on Saturday, April 4th, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Visitation is scheduled for Saturday, April 11th, from 10 a.m. to noon at No. 10 Church of Christ, 27019 North 470 East Road, Potomac, followed immediately by a celebration of life service at noon, led by Pastor Gary Davis. Burial will take place following the service in Partlow Cemetery, Armstrong. Memorial donations can be made to the No. 10 Church of Christ, 4402 East 2800 North Potomac North Road, Potomac, Illinois, 61865, in Gerald's memory. Vivian M. Rose, 88 of Catlin, died Monday, April 6th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, Danville. Memorial services will be held at a later date. David R. Tester, 66 of Shelbyville, formerly of Danville, died Sunday, April 5th at Carl Broman Medical Center, Normal. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortville Funeral Service and Crematory, 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton. And we have some sports. Sports editor Matt Daniels with a look at what's going on around the area, the Daily Pitch. Three reasons we love sports today. Champaign Central graduate Tanner Gordon started his third game of the season on Wednesday afternoon for the Class AAA Albuquerque Isotopes. Keep pitching like he has so far, and a call-up to the Colorado Rockies might happen soon. Gordon improved to 2-0 with the Isotopes after their 13-5 road win against the El Paso Chihuahuas, with Gordon throwing 5 1/3 innings and giving up 4 runs on 5 hits. He has 15 strikeouts on the season to go with a 2.76 ERA. Mohammed Seymour graduate Blake Walters was set to make his second start of the season for the Columbia Fireflies on Friday. The 21-year-old right-hander allowed 1 run and 1 hit in 4 1/3 innings in his first start last Friday. Numbers game 2. Appearances at the Masters for former Illini men's golf standout Brian Campbell. The 33-year-old Campbell made his debut at Augusta National last year, tying for 32nd. A 2-time PGA Tour winner in 2025, Campbell will tee off at 10:15 a.m. on Thursday in the first round with Andrew Novak and Tom McKibben. Campbell has only made the cut in 2 of the 9 PGA events he's played this year, with his highest finish a tie for 54th at the WM Phoenix Open on Friday. Crowd control. 3 events I'm paying attention to. 1, Champaign Central at Danville Softball. Haley Helm and the Maroons will look to keep their solid start intact when they face the host Vikings in a Big 12 conference game at 4:30 p.m. on Thursday. to St. Joseph Ogden at St. Thomas More Softball. Timra, Blackburn Kelly, and the Spartans have won four straight before taking on the host Sabres at 4:30 p.m. on Thursday in an Illini Prairie Conference game in Champaign. 3. Centennial at Urbana Softball. Zoe Goodrow and the Charters make the short trip across town to play the host Tigers at 4:30 p.m. on Thursday in Big 12 action. Ask an Athlete. 3 questions with St. Joseph Ogden sophomore Ryder Van Meenen, who plays football and basketball with the Spartans. 3 athletes I'd like to have dinner with are LeBron James, Darren Peterson, and Jared McClain. The TV show I most like to binge watch is SpongeBob SquarePants. My biggest pet peeve is when my socks get wet. Preps baseball going around the horn. Big second inning plus a combined no-hitter power host Maroons to convincing victory. Prior to his team's Big 12 conference opener against Urbana on Wednesday at Spalding Park, Champaign Central baseball coach John Stapp said he was searching for a little consistency out of his players. He was hopeful they would find some for this game, maybe even a little confident it would happen after seeing how ready to go they were. Everybody had the energy going, so that helped for sure, Central senior Trey Cole said. Whenever we're energized for the game, we always see success, so the energy was huge for us. The Maroons used that energy to propel them to an 18-0 run rule against the Tigers in 4 innings, highlighted by the 5 home runs at the plate and a combined no-hitter on the mound. It was a good day, what we've been looking for, Staub said. More than anything, we came out with a lot more focus. We've kind of been a roller coaster, so it was good to see that. It didn't take long for the Maroons to set the tone. After a quick scoreless top of the first inning by senior pitcher Wilson McDaniel, Ryan Pipkins led off the bottom half with a first pitch single to right field. A few pitches later, John Timmons was rounding the bases after blasting the team's first home run of the day over the left field wall. Cole then tripled and subsequently scored, giving Central a 3-0 lead right out of the gates. The second inning was when the Maroons took it to another level. 3 batters into the frame, Pipkins was already back up to the plate, and he belted a 2-run homer to right field. Following a walk by Timmons, it was Ben McDaniel's turn to hit a 2-run shot over the fence. Urbana made a pitching change, but it didn't matter as Cole sent a home run of his own to left field, marking the 3rd bomb the Maroons hit in the span of 4 plate appearances. And it didn't stop there. Central scored 6 runs in the inning before recording its first out, and Nick Braltz later hit a 2-run homer as the carousel kept spinning. In total, the Maroons sent 20 batters to the plate in the frame and scored 14 runs to make it a 17-0 game. It's fun, Staub said. Really good at-bats. We value quality at-bats, and we had quite a few. That was a fun inning for us, for sure. In an offensive showcase like that, the pitching can easily get lost in the mix. Wilson McDaniel pitched the first 2 innings, with Tigers leadoff batter Corey Johnson being the lone one to reach base on a hit by pitch in the first inning. Pipkins then only allowed a walk in the 3rd inning, again to Johnson, and Ian Weber finished the job with a 1-2-3-4th to secure the combined no-hitter. It feels really good that we get to share it together as a team, McDaniel said. It was a team effort out there. We couldn't have done it without the defense or the hitters. It felt good knowing that my team had my back out there. Even if I screwed up, I knew they would back me up at the plate. Pipkins ended the game 3-for-3 at the plate with 4 RBI. Timmon drove in a 3rd run after his first inning home run, and Ben McDaniel added a double and 3 RBI to go with his homer. Cole was just a single away from hitting for the cycle and brought home a pair of runs, and Braltz reached base 3 times with 2 RBI and a stolen bases. After Central entered its reserves, Isaac Huddleston added an RBI single in the 3rd inning for the final run of the game. Urbana coach Joe Weimelt knew Wednesday was going to be an uphill battle. The Tigers' last win over their Twin City rival was on May 20th, May 20th, 2014, and this is just their third year back to varsity action after the program took a two-year hiatus in 2022 and 2023. They were going up against a team that's won five consecutive regional titles and made it to the Class 3 Elite 8 just last year. Urbana's team is made up mostly inexperienced underclassmen, but Weimelt sees promise in his players as they emphasize championship effort. We've got a lot of growth we're continuing to make, and putting the reps and practice time is going to pay off as the season progresses, Weimelt said. We're learning just going through some of those bumps and bruises of a young, inexperienced team. But I love the effort. These guys show up every day to practice to get better and wanting to learn the game. That's all we can ask for. Wednesday was Central's 21st consecutive win against the Tigers, and Staub said we're going to need more of that down the stretch as the schedule gets a little more uphill. The Maroons will try to stretch that streak to 22 on Friday at Urbana. Staying humble will be huge for us, Cole said. We usually see our struggles after big wins, just getting in our heads and thinking we're better than we might be at times. Just staying humble and continuing to be within ourselves in games will help us. There's a photo on the front of the sports page with the caption, Muhammad Seymour baseball players Max Shung, Matthew Kirby, Nolan Sanderson, and Jake Mercer celebrate during Wednesday's 15-0 victory against Taylorville in Muhammad as four different players hit home runs in the Bulldogs' home rout in Apollo Conference play. Now we have Scott Ritchie's column, Why Blackwell Could Fit with the Illini. No one on the 25-26 Illinois men's basketball roster wore number 25. No one, in fact, has worn that number since walk-on guard Max Williams during the 23-24 season and Kendrick Nunn before him. That number has some history, of course. Nunn was the fifth former Simeon standout to wear the number 25 at Illinois, a tradition that began with Nick Anderson in honor of former Wolverine star Benji Wilson. But there could be reason to dust off number 25 ahead of the 26-27 season. The transfer portal opens Tuesday, and it included John Blackwell. The now former Wisconsin guard announced Monday he was declaring for the NBA draft and would enter the portal. Blackwell wore number 25 for the Badgers. Illinois' interest in the 6'4" guard isn't hard to suss out. Blackwell's dad, Glenn, played for the Illini from 1985 to 88 and had his best season as a senior on the precursor team to the Flying Illini's Final Four run the following year in 1989. You might have seen the elder Blackwell at this year's Final Four with his former Illinois teammates. The younger Blackwell isn't just a legacy case, either. If that were true, Illinois might have offered him out of high school. Wisconsin was the only high major program that actually did, and Blackwell has rewarded them during the course of the past three seasons. Blackwell had his breakout moment as a sophomore for the Badgers and then turned into a Big Ten star this season in Madison, Wisconsin. The native of Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, averaged 19.1 points on 43-39-86 shooting to go with 5.1 rebounds and 2.3 assists and wound up an All-Big Ten third-team selection. The fit at Illinois is clear. The Illini have to reload their backcourt, with Kylan Boswell exhausting his eligibility and Keaton Wagler likely headed to the NBA, considering he's a projected top six pick in the June draft. Incoming freshmen Quentin Coleman and Lucas Murillo could have a say in who populates the guard spots in Illinois' rotation, but a veteran presence like Blackwell could be key, even if none of them are traditional point guards. That's not a non-starter, of course, for Brad Underwood. Marcus Damask was the Illinois point guard in the 2024 Elite Eight run. Wagler, who was named the Jerry West Award winner at the nation's top shooting guard, ran the offense this past season. Retention is a priority for Illinois this offseason, as in keeping players from transferring, and if that is successful, you could see the Illini treat the portal more surgically, like last offseason when Zvonimir Ivicic and Andrei Stojkovic were the only transfer additions. A team that returns a core group from a Final Four can be selective in the portal. Blackwell will have plenty of suitors willing to open their wallets, but Illinois has a rather impressive recruiting pitch to make. Radio check. Underwood made his first post-NCAA tournament media appearance Tuesday morning on the Mully and Haw radio show on The Score. There you found out the Illinois coach hasn't rewatched his team's Final Four 71-62 loss to Connecticut and chose not to watch Monday's national championship game between Michigan and Villanova. "I looked at the box score when I got up about 5:30 this morning," Underwood said. "I was pretty much, I don't want to say sour grapes, but it's very, very hard to put an ending to that. Endings stink. They're not much fun. I guess you're never prepared for that. It's frustrating to lose and not play your best. The ball just didn't go our way. It didn't bounce in." Underwood, of course, doesn't have too much time to dwell on the end of the 25-26 season with the transfer portal in full swing. Although the Illinois coach acknowledged, with so many team seasons finished for nearly a month already, that there's a lot of information bouncing around in the world of basketball. Underwood reinforced retention would again be key for Illinois this offseason. The Illini built around Boswell, Tomislav Ivicic, Ben Hunrickhouse, and Jake Davis, plus pre-injury Ty Rogers, in piecing together what turned out to be the Final Four caliber roster. "The idea is to do it again. We've got three seniors we know we're losing," Underwood said, referencing Boswell, Hunrickhouse, and A.J. Redd. "We've addressed some of those things at this point already with recruiting. We'll see what the portal world brings and what that looks like. We have a great group who hope we can retain and bring back and run this thing back. But until you know, you don't know. We'll just play everything by ear and be ready and prepared for what's out there." On to the offseason. The college basketball offseason began in earnest for everyone not long after Michigan beat Connecticut 69-63 in the national championship game late Monday night in Indianapolis. While there had been plenty of pre-portaling before it opened on Tuesday, moves couldn't be made until players were officially in the portal. Keeping names out of the portal is key for Illinois. Retention is an off-season priority, particularly when it comes to the Illini's Balkan contingent. Bringing back David Mirkovich and Ivicic twins plus Stojkovic could keep Illinois on that Final Four track. The Illini have established a recruiting foothold overseas. Other programs are starting to do the same, at least when it comes to landing players from outside the United States. But perhaps only at a surface level compared to the Underwood and company have accomplished. "We dove hard," the Illinois coach said. "I think it goes back to Orlando Antigua, Jeff Alexander, and the years and years of relationships that they have built over there. Those young guys aren't coming here without the relationships that have been worked hard on with people over there. I went to Belgrade. I did a clinic last summer. I spent 4 days over there, had the time of my life, and when it comes to basketball, coach, I was in pure heaven talking basketball." Those relationships are very, very important. It's not just go over there and say, we're going to recruit. I'm sure there will be others who try and do that, but I hope it doesn't become just about an NIL deal. It's about the relationship and the substance, and we've obviously had a lot of success with the style of play and our development of players as well. The success Mirkovich had this season and that Tomislav Ivicic has had across two seasons could keep that door open for Illinois to keep landing top international talent, particularly from the Balkans. People back home in the Balkans are going to see this as the best place for playing basketball at this age and the best place to improve ourselves, Mirkovich said. "It's the right move to come here. When they saw how much success we've had, they'll come." We have Bob Asmussen's column. Class of its own. Big Ten finds its happy place as League of Champions with no end in sight. The Big Ten is having a moment, one that feels more like a permanent state of being. Since the start of the 25-26 school year, the conference has earned 8 national titles, with the potential for more this spring. Northwestern's field hockey team got it started in November, followed by Washington men's soccer championship in December. That was the first title for the Huskies, who beat North Carolina State in overtime. Then came UCLA's men's water polo title victory against Southern California. Next, of course, Indiana's unreal run to the college football playoff title, one of the best sports stories ever. March was a great month for Tom Pettit's league, with Penn State taking another wrestling title and Wisconsin beating Ohio State in an all-Big Ten NCAA women's hockey final. April is going well, too, with Michigan and Wisconsin advancing to this week's men's hockey Frozen Four. Oddly, the hockey semifinals and final are being played at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, not your typical hockey climate. The Big Ten just pulled off the basketball double whammy, winning the women's title, UCLA, and the men, Michigan. It was the first title for a Big Ten's women team since Purdue in 1999. The men's gap was a year shorter, going back to Michigan State in 2000. And the Big Ten isn't close to done for the year. The league has title contenders in men's gymnastics and women's gymnastics, baseball, softball, men's and women's golf, men's and women's tennis, men's and women's track. Good move after all. When the Big Ten added former Pac-12 schools, Oregon, Southern California, UCLA, and Washington, there was an immense amount of griping. It's too far. The schools have nothing in common. What will they add? The gripers, in hindsight, were wrong. Of those 8 titles mentioned at the start of this story, 3 belong to the newcomers. Better yet, they have room for growth. Southern Cal's football program has underachieved, but it is still recruiting with the best of them. It's only a matter of time before the Trojans take off. Oregon has been so close in its first football title. Perhaps this is the year. Washington is sneaky good in football, too. All 4 schools add so much in the other sports. While the travel isn't ideal, it is giving fans of Big Ten teams in the Midwest and East an excuse to check out the West. You can say you don't like California, but it would be nice if you actually visited there first. Los Angeles is a blast, and Eugene and Seattle are beautiful. Those places are now part of the Big Ten, which should be celebrated. Big bucks. Say whatever you like about name, image, and likeness, and the transfer portal, they are both here to stay. Fortunately for the Big Ten, most of the schools seem to have a Mark Cuban on their side. The Indiana alum has helped fund the Indiana program. People like Cuban keep the Big Ten competitive with other leagues. The winning figures to continue. Other than the 4 schools from the Pac-12, the Big Ten faces geographic challenges. Weather can be a factor, though. It shouldn't be for football. Simple solution for coaches in cold weather states like Illinois and Michigan. Remind the players there are NFL teams playing in the cold, too. Might want to get used to it now. The Big Ten has struck literal gold with its media rights deals. Next time they come open, the league will be able to bargain with its newfound basketball success and continue dominance in football. There is value for all other sports. Athletic department budgets stay massive, facilities get built, and everybody wins. Except for everybody else. Sorry, ACC, Big 12, and SEC. Gilgo Beach serial killer. Suspect pleads guilty, admits killing 8 women. A Long Island architect who led a secret life as a serial killer pleaded guilty Wednesday to murdering 7 women and admitted he killed an 8th in a string of long unsolved crimes known as the Gilgo Beach killings. Rex Huerman, 62, entered the pleas in a courtroom packed with reporters, police, and victims' relatives, some of whom wept as he detailed his murders. He will be sentenced in June to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Huerman's guilty pleas to 3 counts of first-degree murder and 4 of intentional murder bring finality to a case that bedeviled investigators, tormented victims' families, and tantalized a true crime-obsessed public for years. Although he wasn't charged in her death, he also admitted that he killed Karen Vergata in 1996. This has been a long journey of hope that one day we would stand here and say her name with justice beside it. Melissa Cann, the sister of victim Maureen Brainerd Barnes, said at a news conference hours after their hearing as she fought back tears. Today, that long, painful journey brings us to this moment. In court, Huerman admitted that he strangled all 8 victims and dismembered some of them before dumping their bodies. Wearing a black suit coat and white button-down shirt, Huerman appeared matter-of-fact and unemotional as he answered questions from Suffolk County District Attorney Ray Tierney, and the judge. He never looked back at the packed courtroom gallery. The women, many of them sex workers, were killed over a 17-year span. This defendant walked among us play-acting as a normal suburban dad, when in reality all along he was obsessively targeting innocent women for death, Tierney said at the post-hearing news conference. He thanked the victims' relatives, including some standing alongside him, for helping bring their loved ones' stories to life, and he praised members of the Gilgo Beach Homicide Investigation Task Force, which cracked the case with the help of clues that included DNA lifted from a discarded pizza crust. Gloria Allred, an attorney for some of the victims' families, described several of the women as young mothers who were trying to earn extra money to support their children. Little did they know that the defendant, Rex Huerman, did not care about their hopes and dreams, or that they had families and friends who loved them, Allred said at the news conference. Elizabeth Baxiel, whose daughter Jessica Taylor was murdered by Huerman, said, "I am glad that this is over as far as him pleading guilty. It took a big chunk of stress off of me and my family." Tenuous situations. Tehran claims Israel violating ceasefire with strikes on Lebanon. Vance to lead U.S. delegation for weekend talks. The White House announced the U.S. would hold direct talks with Iran, even as continued fighting in the Middle East, punctuated by Israeli strikes in Lebanon, threatened to derail a fragile ceasefire in the six-week conflict. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said Vice President J.D. Vance would lead a U.S. delegation to Islamabad, which would include Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, with the first round of talks taking place Saturday morning local time. Sporadic fighting, however, continued throughout the region, including in Lebanon, where Israel continued its campaign against the Iran-aligned Hezbollah militia. Iran officials cast that as violating the terms of the less-than-day-old ceasefire. The Iran-U.S. ceasefire terms are clear and explicit. The U.S. must choose ceasefire or continued war via Israel. It cannot have both, Iran Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said in a social media post. In a subsequent post, Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagdar Ghalibaf cited the fighting in Lebanon, as well as claims of a drone entering Iranian airspace, as the denial of Iran's right to enrichment, saying that in such circumstances, a bilateral ceasefire or negotiations is unreasonable. Further underscoring the fragility of the truce, Iran kept up strikes on Gulf states and the Strait of Hormuz remained largely blocked. President Donald Trump has said that reopening the strait is a condition for halting the fighting. Leavitt reiterated Wednesday that Trump expected the strait to be reopened immediately. Iran's semi-official Fars news agency reported that passage of oil tankers through the strait halted after Israeli strikes. Vance countered that assertion, saying, "We are seeing signs that the straits are starting to reopen." Vance, who was traveling in Hungary, told reporters that we're on the right track in negotiations and pushed back on Ghalibaf's statement, saying, "I actually wonder how good he is at understanding English, because some of his comments didn't make sense." The vice president said that Israel offered to check themselves a little bit in Lebanon during discussions with U.S. officials because they want to make sure that our negotiation is successful. The Israeli military on Wednesday said that it had carried out its largest operation against Hezbollah since the start of the Iran war, targeting more than 100 of the militia's command centers and military sites within 10 minutes. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hailed a military campaign he said had set back the Iranian regime's capabilities by many years, but said the war had not ended. This is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette, Part 2, for Thursday, April 9th, 2026. I hope you have a good weekend.